You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We take you to winter, 1776.
Message for General Washington.
Yes, Captain.
Colonel Lee says the Redcoats are encamped just across the river at Trenton, sir.
We need to get the boats down to the Delaware, but the wagons are too noisy. What to do?
We can grease your modern car truck axles, change the oil, and do brakes, belts, and hoses on all brands. Call 323-8650. PerfectionAutoWorks.com.
Welcome to the John C. Scott Political Forum. John C. Scott is hosting one of the longest-running political talk shows in Arizona. This is the John C. Scott Political Forum on KVOI AM 1030, The Voice. And now, John C. Scott.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum on this Saturday afternoon. Glad you could join us. Nancy Pelosi issuing a pointed message to Democrats running for president in 2020. Those liberal ideals that fire up the party's base are big losers when it comes to beating President Donald Trump. And proposals pushed by Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, like Medicare for All, the wealth tax plays well in the liberal enclaves like our own district in San Francisco, but she says they will not sell in Midwestern states that sent Trump to the White House in 2016. What says Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party? He's been all across this country. He's in New York now, somewhere outside of the big city. And what do you say when you hear Nancy Pelosi to say, we just can't drift too far left? It'll be suicidal.
I say Nancy Pelosi has been right on with her observations and predictions since Trump took office. And I think this is another example of her having her pulse on kind of the sentiment of Democrats and the nation, which hasn't always been the case, frankly. But she seems to really understand the picture that what voters want to remove Donald Trump out of office is simply someone who does not scare them and that is less crazy than Trump, but doesn't scare them. And these ultra-progressive policies, whether you love them or not, a lot of Democrats do, half the Democrats do, want to see, you know, some kind of universal health care, Medicare for all, other kinds of changes. But the extreme positions that many are taking are scaring off middle-of-the-road voters. And that is what Nancy Pelosi, I think, is warning people about. That's another reason you see folks like Michael Bloomberg talking about getting into the race now.
Well, you're just outside of the city limits of New York, I believe. What do you New Yorkers say about Bloomberg getting in it? What say you?
Well, it's funny. One political area to another. I was staying, and I am for the month, staying about six blocks from Trump Tower. But at the moment, we happen to be in New Hampshire. So, John, if we're lucky, while I'm sitting here in New London, New Hampshire, maybe a presidential candidate will walk by. If they do, I'll let you know. But people here are saying the same thing. They don't like Trump. They know, you know, they've known him forever in New York. They've never liked him. They know Bloomberg, and they say they can live with Bloomberg. You know, it's kind of our billionaire versus their billionaire. But in Bloomberg, you have someone who understands the political world. He's run for office. He's been successful as a mayor. He can stand toe-to-toe with them as someone who has actually made his money legitimately and isn't crazy, and also represents several of the kind of progressive or at least democratic ideals that fit with the party when it comes to health care and reproductive rights and such. So it's an interesting wild card into the game, which may cause some concerns for Joe Biden, although, you know, Biden still has some solid constituencies that aren't going away. But it does speak to that concern that Nancy Pelosi has brought forth that is a legitimate concern, that the danger that the Democrats face is going so far to the left that they lose that middle group of voters that are the swing voters in the next election.
My question, of course, is when it comes to Bloomberg, what are you going to do when it when it comes down to people saying, well, the guy was a Republican about a year ago. And isn't this Biden's to lose? I mean, isn't this? I mean, the only way he can lose is if he loses it. I mean, he ought to be the odds-on favorite to walk away with this thing, wouldn't you think?
I do think that, and that's why there's great concern that he hasn't, that he's come back to the pack in terms of the polling, which doesn't surprise anyone. I think everyone expected that it would come closer. But he hasn't provided that boost of confidence that folks are looking for. And the way the caucus and the primary voting calendar is set up, it could continue to be problematic for Joe Biden for the first couple of months. Come the end of January, early February, you start in Iowa, where he's in that kind of four-person race right now with Warren and Bernie Sanders, and Buttigieg to some degree is taking some of his voters, and then going to New Hampshire, where it'll be kind of a hometown shootout between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. It's not until South Carolina that Joe Biden really will show his strength, because there you have more moderate Democrats. You have a large African-American voting group, and he's very strong there. But that's several months away. So Joe Biden's challenge is to come out and continue to get stronger in the debates. We have one coming up in another 2 weeks, and then a second one in December. And he's got to essentially reassure the centrist Democrats that he is strong and, up to the task of continuing to campaign hard and run. I think if he's able to do that and comes out strong in New Hampshire, come out strong in Iowa, keep that top tier, one or two, then I think it would be very difficult for someone like Michael Bloomberg to gain any ground, because he's not running in primaries until later on in kind of the primary season. I think his first one will be Alabama. He's going to rely on spending his money, which again is also brings the legitimate criticisms of trying to buy the presidency. So Biden's, it's still Biden's to lose. So far he's shown that he's capable of doing that, but it's still too early to tell.
And you've got the Bloomberg $36 billion, supposedly, matched against Trump's $2 billion or whatever it might be. So you want to talk about very wealthy people, which cars in the race. And there's a lot of money here, a lot of money.
Well, there is, of course, that's the unfortunate part, to see folks like that, like Michael Bloomberg, like Tom Steyer, putting their money behind their own name and deciding to run rather to support a candidate that may have a stronger chance of winning. It's their right to do it, and they're putting the money back into the economy. But it doesn't speak too well for our current political system when we're looking at that kind of situation. But that changed dramatically now with Trump winning, and any billionaire thinks he has the right to spend his own money to become president.
Well, indeed, as you take a look at this next debate coming up, what does somebody have to do in a debate format like that to absolutely separate themselves, other than I don't know punching somebody in the nose? I don't know what else are you going to do? Seriously, how do you separate yourself from the pack? I don't know.
Well, and what we're talking about here are kind of the middle-tier candidates that you have in there, namely Klobuchar, Kamala Harris, Buttigieg to a smaller degree, folks like Andrew Yang. They're all in there around 3-5%. Cory Booker's another one. They're the ones that have that challenge, because they're going to be running out of money very soon if they don't show up in the top three or four at the worst in Iowa. It's hard for anyone to find the magic bullet. They're all coming out with a plan every couple of weeks or so, but they haven't really engaged with the Democratic Party across the board. As you say, no one's really stood out. You can't do it with a plan. It may have to be a moment, and we may not even know what that is yet in the next couple of months, with regard to some connection they're going to have to an issue. But so far, you've got the centrists and the progressives, with those top four, that have stood apart to this point. They've really separated themselves by a good 10 percentage points or more from the rest of the pack, and also are raising millions and tens of millions of dollars to stay far ahead of the pack as well. And that's part of the challenge. We know Bernie Sanders is going to stay in because he's got, I think, still the largest war chest. Warren and Buttigieg still has tremendous amount of appeal and is raising the money there. Joe Biden actually comes in fourth when you're looking at that pack, but it hasn't affected his poll numbers yet. But I think, again, by certainly the end of Iowa, you're going to lose some candidates. By the end of New Hampshire, we'll have more dropout. And so by March 1st, most likely, you probably may see maybe a field that's whittled down to half a dozen serious candidates. So I think that attrition is going to come unless something happens that we don't know now, don't expect, that allows a Cory Booker or Amy Klobuchar to stand out, because the debates aren't going to do it. You know, that's going to be a temporary bump here or there, but that's not going to make the difference. It never really has.
We're talking with Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party. How does the impeachment proceedings play into the debates, as well as the choosing of somebody to run as a Democrat for president of the United States to get a nominee? How does impeachment efforts play into that field?
Well, I think it plays in two ways. For the candidates, to a degree that, you know, they're running against Donald Trump, those that may have a vote, the senators that are running, it may come to where they're going to have to vote to convict. We don't have any people in the House of Representatives that are running for office right now that have an impeachment vote, but all the Democrats in the House are going to vote for impeachment, so it's not going to affect that. When it comes to the Senate, if and when he's impeached, and I think he will be, then I think it'll be really interesting to see what the candidates say. But the challenge is not to get pulled into just focused on impeachment. They have to stay focused on the presidency and on their own campaign. So I don't think you'll see them give too much attention to it. Who it does impact are the voters, and the Democrats in particular. And that's a positive because it keeps the Democrats active and engaged. And that's what we want to see. The good news is we're continuing to see that. If you look at what just happened in Virginia and in Kentucky, of all states, it was a tremendous election night last Tuesday for Democrats in those two states. We've seen turnout like we haven't seen in a long time. We see a Democratic governor elect right now. It's not that race isn't completely decided, but we see that in Kentucky. And the reason it's not completely decided is even though he won by several thousand votes, the Republican is contesting the race because that's what Republicans do. You know, they attack the Democratic process whenever possible. So he's asking for a complete recount. But what happens in Kentucky, and John, I think you'll find this interesting, is that if the other side identifies campaign irregularities and can somehow substantiate that, then the decision is thrown to the state legislature. And it's the state legislature then that can pick the winning candidate for governor. Well, as you can imagine, the Kentucky state legislature is all Republican majority. And so the Republican incumbent governor, who lost the popular vote, as we know right now, is challenging. He's calling for the recount, and we can expect that they will also claim campaign irregularities. He already has, but they have no proof of any yet.
That's going to be amazing.
So we can see that in every single case, Republicans attack democracy, and they attack the vote. And I think we can see that rolling into 2022. We already know that with regard to all their efforts across many states in voter suppression, making it difficult to vote, challenging any legitimate results. The other good news is in Virginia, they weren't able to do that because it was so overwhelming. And now we have a governor that's a Democrat, and both houses of the Virginia legislature are Democrat. And that's a huge turnover and huge win there. And I think that's a signal that Democrats are still very active and very engaged. And now I think it's very reasonable to expect that kind of engagement to continue into 2020. So to get back to your first question, the best thing that the Democratic candidates can do for president is not screw that up.
Don't screw it up.
Don't screw it up.
Don Jorgensen, thanks for being with us. Always great talking with you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure, John. Take
all
care.
Right. From the East Coast, just outside of New York, our Democratic commentator for this hour, Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party. Tucson Map and Flag announces concierge service. Although the Tucson Map and Flag store that we all knew to love and, well, patronize for a long, long time, obviously is closed. Tucson Map and Flag is open now, though, during business hours on your phone. You need to call Charles Smith, the American flag expert, at 887-4234. Order your American-made American flag at a great price. Almost any size is available. Travel maps to most places in the world available as well. Now the concierge service of Tucson Map and Flag, just a phone call away. Call Charles Smith at 887-4234 and place your order. Tucson Map and Flag, sharing your pride in America with the display of America's most cherished symbol. Call 887-4234. Don't forget, I'm going to meet you at Crossroads at the movie theater for the showing of Midway on the 23rd of November. There'll be folks in the lobby at 10:30. I'll be there along with a lot of KVOI talk show hosts, and then the movie at 11:30. All KVOI listeners invited to meet at 10:30 a.m. at the lobby of the theater at 4811 East Grant Road at Grant and Swan. Chance to meet other patriots and free-loving radio listeners who like the radio program sponsored by Mike Emery at Perfection Auto Works. Join me at 10:30 on the 23rd of November at the Crossroads Theater for the showing of Midway. Back in a moment. There's never been a better feeling than improving your home furnishings for fall. And now you can feel a new sense of home and a place for your family and guests during this very special time of the year. We invite you to experience the true pleasure of shopping at Southern Arizona's largest selection of pre-owned and new quality furniture and accessories. You must visit the two neighborhood Homestyle Gallery locations, one at 1010 South Wilmot Road and the second at 2950 West Ina Road. Both stores are filled with over 15,000 square feet of beautiful furniture. Here you will find sofas and love seats, chairs and sectionals, beautiful dining sets and more. There's comfortable bedroom sets, dressers and nightstands, modern, traditional and antique. You'll find brands of Thomasville, Lazy Boy, Copenhagen, Broyhill, Bassett and more. Consignment of fine furniture at Homestyle Galleries is an opportunity to turn your once-loved furniture into cash. Call the consignment hotline at Homestyle Galleries, 572-9870. Homestyle Galleries at 1010 South Wilmot and 2950 West Ina Road. Open 7 days a week.
Hi, I'm Charlie Daniels. Now, I've been playing music and performing since before Elvis joined the Army. Yeah, I'm dating myself, but I can't imagine doing anything else. You see, I love music. It's in my blood. Give me a fiddle or a guitar and I'm a happy man. That's why I think it's important that you follow your dream. If you feel passionate about it, do it. You can do anything if you set your mind to it. Don't ever let anyone tell you it's impossible. This message brought to you by the U.S. Air Force.
Long ago, a beautiful ship named the Mayflower sailed towards the New World. At about mid-ocean, the main spar cracked. Then came a voice from below decks.
I can fix that, Governor!
And so the legend goes that almost 400 years ago, the ancestors of Mike Emery came over on the Mayflower and began fixing things. If you're looking for a mechanic about whom you can give Thanksgiving, call 323-8650. That's 323-8650. Perfection Auto Works.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, and provide for a common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. That was signed in convention September 17th, 1787, ratified June 21st, 1788. That's how it began. There's a group of your neighbors and your fellow citizens in southern Arizona that believe we've strayed from our constitutional roots and have divided this nation left and right, Republican and Democrat. We seem to be unable to listen to each other, and we can't seem to solve our problems. Divided, we will fall. You're invited to be a part of a new political movement that places America first and the party second. It's We the People Party, and it's growing every day. Find out more about how you can be a part of the solution to America's struggle. Go to WeThePeople50, that's WeThePeople50.us. This message paid for by We the People, Tucson, Arizona. Mick Pearson was a Republican candidate for the congressional seat held by Raul Grijalva in Congressional District 3. He joins me now. Nick, welcome to the show. Thanks for being with me.
Well, thank you, John. I enjoy always hearing from you and being on your show.
Well, here's the question I've been wanting to ask you, and I'm glad that we could join each other here in this little conversation on this Saturday afternoon. You saw the picture of Raul Grijalva hugging the new mayor-elect of Tucson, Rahina Romero. It was Raul Grijalva who, I believe, picked up the phone and was able to raise over $1 million in outside party interest, certainly out of county and out of city interest, on behalf of Rahina Romero, who is married to his chief of staff, and, of course, is a very close friend of Raul Grijalva. And now Grijalva not only has great inroads in controlling TUSD, as his daughter is a very key player in the Tucson Unified School District 1 School District School Board, which is the largest school district in southern Arizona, but now he has a mayor-elect and a Ward City Councilwoman-elect out of Ward 1. I think Raul Grijalva has a stranglehold on politics that we've never seen before, and it was shown very clearly out of the $1 million that I think he helped raise for Rahina Romero. What do you say?
Well, I agree 100% with you, John. I mean, it should cause people to perhaps be a little bit afraid about what's been happening, because you have the county budget at $1.2 billion, the city budget at about $1 billion, and the TUSD budget at about $600,000, not including the DSEG money. So you have essentially a group of people, a cartel, if you will, a political cartel that controls over $3 billion of taxpayer money. It's kind of scary to me.
Well, it seems to me, too, that these particular inroads into not only TUSD's political structure, but also the city of Tucson, obviously, with a mayor now that is very close to Raul Grijalva, and I think owes Grijalva for her victory. And I think it was. I had Grijalva on the air here just a few days after the election. I asked him, did you make the phone calls that raised $1 million for Rahina Romero? He said, no. I eventually said to him, I don't believe you, Congressman. There's only one person that has that kind of clout to pick up the phone and have $1 million within moments after the phone call. That's you. There's nobody else that could have done that. And, of course, it's true. You have the means, the motive, and the opportunity. What does that make you? Guilty.
Yes, exactly.
So, yeah, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, it's one thing, you know, to vote party line, but you also want to spread the power around. I mean, part of the campaign that I ran was getting the two parties to govern more towards the middle instead of to the extremes. And you'd like to see the citizens in Tucson do that a little bit more instead of voting straight party lines. I mean, it was almost the Republican candidates, the lambs being led to the slaughter. So it's that's a sad state of affairs.
Well, I think you've exactly said the way it is. I mean, it is lambs to slaughter. I can't put it any better. That's exactly what it is.
Go ahead, John.
Well, I was wondering, you know, you ran a formidable campaign against Raul Grijalva. I'm wondering if you're thinking about running again against him in a year now from 2020. What's your take as we round up 2019?
You know, friends ask me about that, and I tell them I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to do when I grow up. I haven't ruled anything out. I haven't ruled anything in. I have contracted, I hope it's not a terminal disease, but it's called the political virus. And you want to contribute to the community. I do, and I want to make it a better place, and especially a better place for our children and grandchildren. And so, you know, you struggle because you know that if the teeter totter goes too far one way, the other end of the teeter totter isn't going to be able to get it off the ground. And that's essentially what's happening with the balance of power here in Pima County and the city of Tucson. And it's kind of a sad thing to see, because you really need to have a proper balance between the government sector and the private sector, and that's certainly going out of play. I mean, you know, over the years, I've talked to friends who were who are Democrats, and they've complained on the one hand about the fact that a lot of the functions that they were able to contract with the city and in the county before are being taken over by the government entities so that they've lost contractual work. But then on the other hand, if they get thrown a bone here and there, they stay in the play, and you'd like to see a more even playing field for contracting for these taxpayer dollars instead of you're my buddy, you know, you're going to get this contract.
Well, and I want to know whether it's going to be Grijalva running City Hall or whether it's going to be Rahina Romero. It's going to be one through the other. I think we're going to see an attempt to, if not move more closely to a sanctuary city structure in Tucson, Arizona, even though we probably, after a solid vote against being a sanctuary city by the public, will not ever probably have that on the ballot again to ratify it in that form. But moving closer to implementing a policy of sanctuary cities across America for Tucson, I think, is one of the priorities of the new mayor. I think a $15 minimum wage is a priority of the new mayor. And I think we're going to find the Grijalva agenda really the Rahina Romero agenda. And I think, as I clearly pointed out in the beginning of this interview, Raul Grijalva is stronger now than he's ever been. He's got a mayor. He's got a Ward 1 council seat. He's got the Board of Supervisors literally afraid to take him on. And he also has TUSD. That's a pretty powerful group of political entities that literally answer to a Grijalva call. And I haven't seen that before, but it's there, and I think you would ignore it at your own peril, really, if you're a politician in this town. Absolutely.
Exactly. And you'd think that the community would say, well, gee, you know, we need to balance out the power a little bit more than what it is, because at the end of the day, we know that power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, and that's proven time and time again. So, you know, you'd think that the community would be more conscious of that and say, well, okay, well, let's push the lever for an R here or an independent there and, you know, transfer the power a little bit.
Well, I don't know. I would hope they would consider that in these elections that are forthcoming. We're going to let you go, and then you're going to let us know whether you're going to run in 2020. I'll be anxious to hear your decision on that, and I hope that you'll give us a call when you make up your mind. But I appreciate you being on the show today. Thanks so much, Nick.
Well, thank you, John. I appreciate you having me.
You bet. Nick Pearson, who is the congressional candidate for the Republican Party in Congressional District 3, taking on Raul Grijalva. Well, I want you to know that the Midway movie's coming up at the Crossroads Theater. That's on the 23rd of this month. The show starts at 11:30. There's going to be a big gathering in the lobby about 10:30 at the theater at 4811 East Grand Road at Grand Swan. There's a chance to meet the other patriots and free-loving radio listeners who like radio programs sponsored by Mike Emery at Perfection Auto Works. And you can join Mike Emery, meet radio personalities like Charles Heller of Liberty Watch, and of course me, John C. Scott, and the folks of Brush Fire Freedoms, Sean Hoffine, and then Jeff Prather will be among those that will be shaking your hand and greeting you to watch the movie Midway. This event is a meet and greet, and it's not free. You're going to have to buy your own ticket, your own food, and that kind of thing. But what the heck? It's a capitalist gathering, and you can join other like-minded Americans to talk and to watch the new remake of the classic Battle of Midway. The event starts at 10:30 at the Midway Movie Theater at Crossroads Theater. Then the movie starts at 11:30 a.m. If you've got any questions, you can call Sean Hoffine at 780-8539. That's 780-8539. Well, I'll see you there on the 23rd of November. Hope you'll join us. We'll be back in a moment with Ed Ackerley, who was an independent candidate for mayor, defeated by the lady we were talking about, Rahina Romero, who is the now mayor-elect of Tucson, the Democrat, with an overwhelming victory on election night. We'll be talking with Ed Ackerley. What's next for him after these messages?
See, butterball turkey, stuffing mix, mashed potatoes. Okay, that's the next aisle. This cart pulls to the right.
Why don't we take it to Perfection Auto Works? They fixed our car when it did that.
They don't work on shopping carts.
This is Mike Emery at Perfection Auto Works. Our free 26-point inspection makes most car troubles a distant memory. 323-8650 or at PerfectionAutoWorks.com. 323-8650.
Save 40% on your dry cleaning bill at Tom Roof Cleaners at Fort Lowland Country Club. Mention John C. Scott on Saturdays and Sundays, and you'll save 40% on your dry cleaning bill. Drop off your wash and fold clothes and pay only 90 cents per pound. Tom Roof Cleaners reminds you that every garment is clean with using the patented Green Earth Cleaning System. The Green Earth Cleaning System leaves every garment soft and smooth to the touch without a dry cleaning smell. Mention John C. Scott at Tom Roof Cleaners Saturday and Sunday and save 40% off your dry cleaning bill. Tom Roof Cleaners at Fort Lowland Country Club. Concrete Done With Love has been Arizona's leading concrete contractor for over 40 years. Owner Kurt Lutzkin has built Concrete Done With Love to serve Arizona's biggest and smallest concrete jobs. Concrete Done With Love provides the best concrete placing and finishing that is possible, and doing it at a competitive price. The crews at Concrete Done With Love are craftsmen who take great pride in the aspects of their work. For the best concrete jobs in Arizona and the best price, call Kurt Luscombe at Concrete Done With Love, 639-9928. Concrete Done With Love offices at 1771 West Dairy Place, Tucson.
Huh?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Show. Ed Ackerley was an independent candidate for mayor. It's over. Now, what do you think?
It was fun. I had a great
really,
time.
No kidding. A lot of people think, well, gee, I lost. It wasn't fun at all.
I had an absolute great time. It was a great experience to listen to people talk about their city that they love and give me lots of advice on what I should do should I make it in there. So it was fun.
All right, what is the advice they want you to do? They don't want you to go away completely, that's for sure.
Well, I will say overwhelmingly, people have been coming up to me, continue to come up to me. I was just at an event down in Sonoyta, and half a dozen people approached me independently. They're thanking me for running, thanking me for the voice that I presented for them, and asking me to stay involved. So it's been a little, that's a little humbling, you know. At least they didn't say, you stink, get out of here, and don't ever come back. It was quite the opposite. It's been pretty positive.
Yeah, and I think you met a lot of people you didn't even know that now know you. And I think that's a great part of the whole campaign situation, is the people that you meet along the way.
Right.
And I think you have a greater faith in the electorate and people and neighbors and a town when you get to meet so many people that you didn't even know existed.
So many people helped me that I didn't know about, and they're still helping me. I got a couple of signs still left up, and you know, people are picking them up for me and bringing them by and say they found this one on this street and bringing it by my office. So, and I never knew them, and they're just chipping in to help. So that's really kind of neat too as well.
When you think about running again, would you stay an independent, or would you go to a major party?
Well, I think
you were a Democrat for a long time.
I was a Democrat for a long time.
Would you be opposed to going back to the Democratic Party?
I'm not in the Democrat mold. I am not the left wing progressive type thing. I guess I would be if we looked at the national political folks that are running for president. I guess I'd be closest to Biden. I don't know, but even he's a little more left than I am. I'm not big on a lot of taxes, and I'm not big on
Are you comfortable in what the Republican Party used to be?
What the Republican Party used to be, I think, is good, and I even think that they're they've been co-opted by our president, and they're so far to the right on some of those major national issues that it just, you can't even have a conversation with some people before they go off. And I was talking to somebody yesterday about if our previous president would have called somebody a name or done something that this president has done, you know, those same people that are defending our current president would fly off the handle about the balance of what the way people view politics and the balance of the way that they kind of look through the lens of their political party at the reality is so stilted. And I think that's why the independent movement is such a attractive thing for so many people, because at least it comes from, you know, listening to both sides and have a little bit more perspective. Perhaps.
Is it impossible to be a critic of the mayor who defeated you in the election? I mean, it's almost seemingly impossible to have a shadow government, right. You know, that would be a critic of the decisions made by the candidate that won. Would you still play any kind of role in that if you saw something happening that disturbed you, bothered you?
Just as a citizen, I believe that I've before made comments and been in council offices talking to people about decisions that are forthcoming long before I ever ran for for office. But I don't think my role necessarily, John, would be to be a critic of the current situation. I think, you know, it's going to sound kind of strange, but I think I need to be supportive of it. I think I need to make sure that things go right in our city, not that they continue to go wrong, but make sure that we're heading in the right direction. And I owe that to my grandsons and to my own sons and to my wife and all. We need to all come together. And you know, the electorate spoke, and they spoke loudly, and they said that they wanted the mayor-elect, and that's fine. That's, you know, that's the way politics is played. And had the reverse happened, had I won and she was asked the same question, I would hope she would say that she would support me. Now, I don't want some of the policies, obviously. Some of the policies are pretty far to the left. And, you know, whether it be a million trees or starting out with climate change or the Kidco thing or some of those things, I just think that that's not well served for Tucson right now. Not that those things aren't noble causes. We need to be talking about public safety. We need to be talking about roads. We need to be talking about parks. That's what the charter says, and that's what we should be doing.
Well, how will you play a role, do you think?
Well, I'm still out there. I someone told me the other day, I took about a half a day off on Wednesday. I went into the office and wrote a bunch of thank you notes to people and congratulatory notes, and then I took about a half day off and went home and watched How the Universe Works on Amazon Prime,
really?
Just to get my mind off of politics for a while. And then I woke up on Thursday morning and I said, you know, this is my town. I live here. I was a citizen and a player before I ran. I'm going to continue to be that. I'm going to still be a business person. And so I actually haven't taken my foot off the gas. I've made some commitments to events and going to things and doing stuff with people before I knew the outcome, and been to two today so far. I'm going to two more. I'm going to be at an event tomorrow for Richard Fimbres. I'm going to, throughout the week, I have a half a dozen. I'm still stepping on the gas going forward, saying, you know, let's do this thing. So I haven't stopped yet. So.
Well, you know, still being involved, that's a difficult thing. I've won elections, I've lost elections, and after losing, I don't necessarily want to do anything, you know, for that matter, other than, you know,
I was thinking about moving
in a fetal position.
Yeah, thinking about moving, but
you know, put the covers over my head and say, wake me up when all this is over with.
Yeah,
I'll tell you a funny story. I was running again for the state senate and lost by 86 votes in a rerun, and I had borrowed some money from First Interstate Bank, James Stewart Douglas, I guess it was his bank. I can't recall what bank was.
Arizona Bank?
No, it was, I don't think it was. But anyway, I had borrowed, I think, $2,500 because I needed an apartment when I went up to Phoenix, and it was kind of a, you know, interest-only thing, right, to give you to the legislators. He called me the day after I lost by 86 votes, and he said, this loan of yours is due and payable today. And I went, well, good for you, because you're not going to get this maybe tomorrow, but I'm feeling pretty bad today. And that's what you're worth after you lose, you know. Well, yeah. Show me the money, you know. And but I mean that I always laughed about that.
Well, you know, when I was the chairman of the American Advertising Federation, I got
Southern Arizona Bank. I'm
Southern
sorry.
Arizona Bank. Yeah. When I was the chairman of the American Advertising Federation for that term that I served, I was hobnobbing with the biggest CEOs and presidents of the biggest advertising agencies and the biggest companies in the country. And, going to dinner and having meetings and running around. And the day I passed the gavel to the next person, it was like
they didn't remember your name.
disappear into oblivion. And, you know, I had to remake myself as an AAFer and become relevant to them. And I did. And certainly I am today. And I think that's kind of the lesson that I learned. If I'm going to remain relevant in the conversation, they have the power. They have the bully pulpit. They have the electorate has voted them in, and that's great for them. But I still can be relevant and have a voice in Tucson that I think is going to be helpful to the future growth.
You know,
of our city.
I think that we all have to be pretty vigilant here with the new administration. This whole new council.
Mm.
I had said all along, and in many conversations that you and I had about this race, I think the voters of Tucson have been pretty pleased with the city council. They voted yes for more money for roads. They voted yes for more money out of their pocket for parks. I think they've had a referendum on the council as it existed, and on the city manager, Mike Ortega. Mm-hmm. So I think the people of Tucson saying yes to those particular things that actually cost them money has been really a referendum on the council. Mm-hmm. But this is a new council.
Right.
And we have a new Ward 4 council member. We have a new Ward 1 council member. We have a new mayor. This is a whole new ballgame. I'm not sure what we have here.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic. And what is the first couple of things? Obviously, they're going to take care of the business of the council, which is zoning and which is, you know, all the things that they do on a kind of a pedestrian basis on a daily basis. But what is the direction going to be for our city? Are we really going to address that climate change promise? Are we going to address Kidco and be in the babysitting business as a community? Whether or not you think that's a good idea or a bad idea. At the expense, perhaps, of police and fire, at the expense of roads and fixing the roads. And, you know, the roads problem is not something that's going to be fixed in one term. It's got to be something that's addressed on the long range because there's just so many of them. But we need to make sure that that the priorities of the council, you know, align with everybody that lives in the city of Tucson, not just those special interest groups.
Well, and I think that we're going to take a look at some of the thing, and I've said all along this recycling thing is just a boondoggle. We've got a huge amount of money that we are now spending for no recycling because we don't have a market for our recyclables, and I think that's going to be a big problem for us.
I think water is an issue that didn't come up a lot in the council, the races, and I brought it up as many times as I could in the mayoral forums, but I think that's something that the council is going to have to address. In the future, we just can't continue. I mean, obviously, Tucson Water has done a great job of planning for the future. But, 50 years, 80 years, 100 years down the line, it's going to really rest on what we do in the next 4 years. So I think it's an important issue that really didn't get a lot of attention.
No, it didn't. I think whether you're going to deal with a minimum wage of $15 an hour, probably ought to stay away from that. Mm-hmm. Trying to litigate the whole situation of a sanctuary city status to please some people who are going to be very disappointed now that it has been defeated, I think is going to be a situation we just need to avoid and move ahead. This council, I think, as it is made up, and we're going to find out, has a tendency to move left on many different issues, which may not be the right direction to move as we face some of the problems of not only police and fire, but transportation and some of the basic needs of this city and requirements of a city. So, I don't know, we'll all be watching, I guess, a little bit and looking over the shoulders of the new mayor. I wish her well. I think she's a nice person. I don't think she was the best person for the job, but we're going to find out how good she can be, and we wish her the best. I do.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how the Sanctuary Cities issue plays out over the next year or so. You know, she's already stated that she wanted to talk with the governor about repealing SB 1070, which, you know, one would argue that that's part of the Sanctuary Cities issue, and first off, the governor's probably not the guy to be lobbying. It's the state legislature, not the governor. If that crops up and comes back in and is an issue after it was soundly defeated by the, you know, one could make the argument that the initiative was soundly defeated and that everyone that voted no against it wants Tucson to be a sanctuary city. I don't think that's true. I think the majority of people that voted it down don't want to have the label sanctuary city. And I think if the council goes down that road and starts talking about that and wants to make that happen, I think those of us that were vehemently opposed to it need to really express our opinion.
I think if people look back at the history of this campaign in 2019, they're going to say, where did all that money come from? Mm-hmm. And how much of an effect did it have on the primary election of Raheena Romero as the Democratic nominee for mayor? Over $1 million thrown into the race by third-party efforts. And is that proper? Just talked with Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party. He said no. Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party, said no. Larry Bodine, who's blogged for Arizona, said this is outrageous to have this kind of third-party money in a race. That dark money, whether it's Democrat or Republican, is dark money. No matter who's wheeling it in a campaign, it's still dark money if you can't trace the origins of the money. Let me take a break and come back with you. Ed Ackerley is the former candidate for mayor of Tucson, independent candidate for mayor. We got to know him very well. We want to know him even more as he continues life as a citizen rather than mayor. But he can play a role as you can as well. We'll be back after these messages. Concrete Done with Love has been Arizona's leading concrete contractor for over 40 years. Owner Kurt Lutzkum has built Concrete Done with Love to serve Arizona's biggest and smallest concrete jobs. Concrete Done with Love provides the best concrete placing and finishing that is possible, and doing it at a competitive price. The crews at Concrete Done with Love are craftsmen who take great pride in the aspects of their work. For the best concrete jobs in Arizona and the best price, call Kurt Lutzkum at Concrete Done with Love, 639-9928. Concrete Done with Love offices at 1771 West Dairy Place, Tucson. Together, they've brought a bit of France to the heart of Tucson. Guigny's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery at Prince and Campbell have become a gathering place for Tucsonans who love great bread and wonderful food. The bread and the pastries of La Baguette Bakery have become a Tucson favorite. And Guigny's French Cafe offers a casual atmosphere and delightful French cuisine at moderate prices. Guigny's is just perfect for breakfast and lunch, offering specialty coffees, lattes, French wine, cocktails, imported beer, and a touch of France in Tucson. And of course, open all day and night, Friday and Saturday until 9 p.m., for happy hour and dinner. Sunday brunch at 2 o'clock. Guigny's French Cafe and La Baguette Bakery in the Safeway Center at Prince and Campbell have become Tucson's destination to dine. Save 40% on your dry cleaning bill at Tom Roof Cleaners at Fort Lowland Country Club. Mention John C. Scott on Saturdays and Sundays and you'll save 40% on your dry cleaning bill. Drop off your wash and fold clothes and pay only 90 cents per pound. Tom Roof Cleaners reminds you that every garment is clean with using the patented Green Earth Cleaning System. The Green Earth Cleaning System leaves every garment soft and smooth to the touch without a dry cleaning smell. Mention John C. Scott at Tom Roof Cleaners Saturday and Sunday and save 40% off your dry cleaning bill. Tom Roof Cleaners at Fort Lowland Country Club.
We take you to winter, 1776.
Message for General Washington.
Yes, Captain.
Colonel Lee says the Redcoats are encamped just across the river at Trenton, sir.
We need to get the boats down to the Delaware, but the wagons are too noisy. What to do?
We can grease your modern car truck axles, change the oil, and do brakes, belts, and hoses on all brands. Call 323-8650. PerfectionAutoWorks.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to John C. Scott Political Forum on this Saturday afternoon with Ed Ackerley, who was the independent candidate for mayor. What surprised you about this race that you just never saw coming?
Well, I think probably what surprised me most was how well we did. I have to be honest with you. On Tuesday before the announcement, before our little thank you party, I kind of went and disappeared and did some soul searching and the numbers were not looking good. We got advance ballot return numbers, and the first 4 or 5 days we were very encouraged by what we had seen, and then that last couple of days the Democrat machine really had flipped the numbers that were coming in. And you know, even if a bunch of those people had voted for me, there were so many Democratic ballots that had come in towards the end there that you knew it wasn't looking good. And
they were coming out of Democratic precincts.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And well, the report that we get shows independent, Republican, Democrat, and other. And so we could count the number of Democratic ballots that were coming in. So I kind of knew at that early in the afternoon on Tuesday that it wasn't going to probably go well for us. So we had the little event, and boy, that was quick. I mean, the media called it immediately, you know, within 10, 20 minutes after the first ballot started being reported. But, you know, a couple things. One thing that I think that not surprised me, but, you know, the report will come out on Tuesday, and they'll finish the canvas, and they'll tell us what the total number is. But, you know, I could be nudging close to 41% of the numbers here, depending on what these last. They had 24 bins still that needed to be counted from the people that had dropped off on election day, and that represented about 13,000 ballots. And we could be over 40%. We know we're over 40% now. We could be touching 41%. And John, just think about this: novice politician running as an independent, never done this before. No, zero, count them, zero, not one person endorsed, not one group endorsed me, not a chamber, not a political party, not anybody. I had about 1/20th of the money that she had, and I still got 41% of the vote. So we had a good message, and we had a good team trying to get that message out. If I'd have had, you know, my financier said, you know, Ed, if we'd had 6 more weeks and $1 million more, you probably would have got this thing. But you know, that's not the way politics works.
And speaking of that, let's talk about the money in this race. Serena obviously knew, I think, there was going to be outside money coming her way, whatever former AIDS had been a part of a third-party effort that was raising money for her outside of her campaign. I think she knew it was coming. Sure. I don't think that anybody would believe that she wasn't so naive to not know that there were people that she was aligned with and that Raul Grijalva was aligned with that were making an effort on her behalf by pumping an enormous amount of money into the campaign, overwhelming it.
Unprecedented, a million bucks
in a campaign like this.
And this is just the mayor of the city of Tucson. I don't want to make it.
It's
like
Congress, you know.
It is a municipal office, so it's important, and it does have a. I wouldn't have run for it if I didn't think it was important. But to spend $1 million to try and get that office, to me, man, that's a. And then you count the money that came from the primary too, from the other candidates. There's a lot of money been spent. We did clean elections matching funds, and we did well. You know, I could have raised $138,000. I raised just over $50,000. So our total was to work with was about $100,500 is what it was. And it you know, hey, we made some magic with just a couple of rocks and a couple of sticks and lit a fire, and it was pretty interesting. So,
well, and I think, too, that when people take a look at this race and that money, I think that you can see it two ways. You can be afraid of what she's able to do. If she could do it once, she could do it again. And if you take her on or you make her mad, there's been some history of her being pretty vindictive as a city council person. I don't know whether that's just part of her makeup or these were isolated incidents. I think she has a tendency to favor people who obviously favor her and not be so kind to those who don't. I think you're going to have to be mayor of all of this city.
Yeah.
And that means every independent like you or every Republican. I mean, you're going to have to be. And I think Rothschild did a pretty good job of being mayor of all of Tucson. But I think the key here is to look and see what Ortega does. We know we have one of the best city managers we've ever had in the history of Tucson. People are pleased with the way this city is moving forward, not only being accountable to taxpayers for money spent, but projects promised and improvements that have to take place, whether it be more firemen, more police officers, better streets, better transportation corridors, and better transportation. But if Ortega leaves, I think there's going to be a tremendous backlash on the part of the council to whoever's going to, you know, be the new leader of the town, which apparently Rahina has told people she's the new leader. If that offends Mike Ortega, the city manager, or they get crossways and he leaves, it's going to be disastrous for the city of Tucson. We've come a long way to get a city manager that we finally can trust, and I think that understands our community, and we've all benefited from his expertise. So I think we need to watch that very carefully.
I do. I do have to say that I am pleased that the campaign with the three mayoral candidates did not get down in the weeds, and we did not sling mud at each other. Matter of fact, John, I would have walked away had that started. It's not worth it to me for my business. It's not worth it to me as a person to sling stuff at one another, and like they did in the primary. I thought the primary was just embarrassing almost. It got so bad. But, you know, we need to conduct a campaign more like we did in the mayor's race. Let's talk about the issues. Here's my set of issues. This is what I think is important. Here's your set of issues. This is what you think is important. Here's your set of issues. What you think is important. Let the voters decide and move forward. And that's how these campaigns should run in the future. If I get my way.
Well, I agree. And you know, it seems to me that we're all in this together, no matter what. And again, I do wish Rahina Romero well. I hope she is not the very liberal candidate I believe that she's going to be. I hope that she does not turn left again and pushes the council in a more left direction, because I think we've gone as far left as we need to go, and we need to obviously get back more to a centrist position when it comes to the politics of running this city with basic services that have to be met. They just have to be met.
And I want to be a voice for that. I think that, you know, I did sit on the sidelines for many years, and I think I can be a voice now. I've got a high profile, and I think I can help the council kind of move towards that centrist position, and I think that's what our city needs. Now, we got to talk about growth, growing our economy and growing and making the opportunity here better for everybody, and, you know, fighting amongst themselves or fighting each other is not going to solve the problem. We got to come together and solve these problems.
And we've been there before, you know, and not in my backyard and the nightmare that's caused in almost any decision-making, whether it came to land use or water or basic environmental requirements that affect us all. Well, thanks for being with us. Congratulations
you,
on your campaign for mayor. You literally made us all proud. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
This is KVOI The Voice. This is the John C. Scott Show. Thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it so much. Don't forget to meet us at the theater at Crossroads for the showing of Midway and meet all the guests of and friends of Mike Emery at Perfection Auto Works. And by the way, this portion of the John C. Scott Show originates from the Perfection Works Auto Studios. I want to thank Mike Emery for sponsoring our show. See you at the Midway Theater. Well, actually, it's at the Crossroads Theater for the showing of Midway, the 23rd of November, 10:30 in the morning. We'll all be there. Hope you'll be there as well.
Long ago, a beautiful ship named the Mayflower sailed towards the New World. At about mid-ocean, the main spar cracked. Then came a voice from below decks.
I can fix that, Governor!
And so the legend goes that almost 400 years ago, the ancestors of Mike Emery came over on the Mayflower and began fixing things. If you're looking for a mechanic about whom you can give Thanksgiving, call 323-8650. That's 323-8650. Perfection Auto Work.